following audio is brought to you by the teaching ministry of Anchor Community Church in Long Beach. For more information about Anchor, please visit www.anchorlongbeach.com.
I was reading a commentary. The ESV has this awesome series of commentaries called Preaching the Word. And I was reading it, and he gives a warning to the Michael Fosses of the world that are going to be preaching this passage. And he calls me out, and he says, be wary to jump into defending this passage. And what he means by that is, don't try to say, well, Peter didn't actually mean to submit to authority. And that's my first instinct. It was a little bit of Gunn's instinct, too, when I was talking to him about it. What do we do as a church in America with this passage? Because a lot of pastors take it two ways. One goes the social justice route. Forget what he's saying about that submission thing. Let's rise up. And that's kind of the more liberal side of things. And then you've got another group of pastors that are like, yeah, America, submit to our, you know, authorities. We got it in control, which leads to a whole other problem that we see in our churches. And so to put it in context, I think is probably the most important part of a verse like this. And I would urge you, whenever you come against passages like this in the Bible, it's okay to struggle with them. We have to lean on God's understanding and not our own, because it will be perplexing at times. But when you come across verses like this, for me, what I had to do is, okay, now I'm reading all of 1 Peter again. Like, I got to see where this fits in Peter's story, and then I got to see where this fits in the gospel story, in the whole entire Bible. And so, as I went back, this kind of questions arose. Is Peter asking the church to ignore injustice? Should we submit to oppressive rulers? And what is the goal of this submission? And that's what I'm going to attempt to answer today through my own wrestling and my own struggling with this. So when I ask myself, what is the goal of our submission, I believe it must always be the glory of Christ and his gospel. We lower ourselves just as Christ came to us, and we should be willing to give up our liberties for the sake of others, just as Jesus did. We must remember that Peter is writing to the persecuted at this time, which is shocking, because his message is not, although you are being persecuted, rise up. He's saying, you are being persecuted, submit, which is really interesting. But he's writing to the persecuted. And I can't seem to shake the fact that within this passage, it is truly asking for Christians to obey and to be subject to human institutions. And to put it in context, I just went back to 1 Peter 2, 9 through 11, and it says, you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for his own possession, that you may proclaim the excellencies of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. Once you were not a people, but now you are God's people. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. Beloved, I urge you as sojourners and exiles to abstain from the passions of the flesh which wage war against your soul. Keep your conduct among the Gentiles honorable, so that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day of visitation. And this kind of puts us into context. What is the goal? The goal is that you may proclaim the excellencies of him who called you out of darkness, so that when they speak out against you as evildoers, they may see your good deeds and glorify God Not glorify you as some revolutionary. Not glorify you as some crazy humble person, but glorify God. And that is the context of what we're dealing with here. And so I've got three simple points. The first one's going to be the longest because it's the hardest one for me. And then we got two more after that. And this is that we are called to be ambassadors of Christ as citizens, servants, and saints. So we are called to be ambassadors of Christ as citizens, servants, and saints. And my first point as citizens is that we see the gospel in social order. 1 Peter 2, 13 through 14 says, "Be subject for the Lord's sake to every human institution, whether it be to the emperor as supreme or to governors sent by him to punish those who do evil and to praise those who do good." Be subject for the Lord's sake to every human institution, whether it be to the emperor as supreme or governors sent by him. Let's just see who this emperor is real quick. Right now in Rome, in this time, Peter's talking during the time of Emperor Nero. He's been widely known as probably one of the most evil dudes, ruthless dudes, and also most conquering dude of all. And so this is not a time of like, yeah, we're sitting pretty, especially for Christians. But it's also a time where emperors refused to be called kings because they had come out of kind of the right monarchy. And to be called a king would be one of the most kind of insulting thing to them because they are beyond kings. They are democratic. We don't need monarchy anymore. So you've got emperor instead. I mean, great switch there. And so I want you to look at one word, and that word is every human institution, whether it be to the emperor. That word emperor there in the original language is basileus, which actually is translated to king. So one of my favorite philosophers is a guy by the name Jacques Ellul. Surprise, surprise. He's what you would call a Christian anarchist. And he is a pacifist, and he is also truly believes that anarchy is the truest form of socialism, and that being so is the most compatible with the Bible, which is very interesting. I'm not really going to speak to that today. That's not my, you know, goal here. But if you're ever interested, come talk to me because I'd love to talk to you about that. There's some very interesting things that he brings up in his book called Christianity and Anarchy. The book does not seek to convert anyone to anarchy, and it doesn't seek to convert anyone to Christianity. What he simply does is present the problems of the two working together and solutions and what's good and what's bad and all that, and then he gives his kind of heart on the matter. This guy struggled a lot kind of during the times of communism. He wanted to be a part of the Communist Party. He wanted to be a part of like the Marxist Party, and they kept saying no. They were like, "You're a Christian. We don't want you here," which is very, very interesting to a guy that would hold very similar beliefs, at least on the line of communism or socialism, stuff like that. But it was not compatible with them because he had this one thing called the gospel that they couldn't get down with because it did present God as the truest form of authority, except that that authority is always played out in the manner of love and not violence. And the
problem with government that Jacques
Ellul uses is that always falling on the form of violence. And as a pacifist, that can't work. So what's interesting here that he says about this verse, because that's in this book, Christianity and Anarchy, is that when dealing with 1 Peter 2:13, he takes it to the side of he's not actually saying submit to those authorities. In fact, he's kind of making fun of those authorities, which could absolutely be true, because let's look at this. If it was so insulting to call an emperor the king, and they would hate that so much, here in this passage we have a word that's used, king and not emperor. And so he says, you see, he's poking fun at this emperor. So be subject to human institutions, even to the emperor or the king or to governors sent by him. And this is kind of what he bases on. Because the point of this government, essentially at the heart of it, is to punish those who do evil and to praise those who do good. And I wish governments worked that way. I really do. I wish governments actually punished those who did evil and actually praised those who do good. And sometimes it works that way. Sometimes it doesn't. So he makes this statement that that word king there is actually trying to poke fun. Therefore, in this passage, we do not need to actually submit to human institutions. And I'm going to kind of, in wrestling with one of my favorite philosophers, show us today that I don't actually believe that's true. Although there may be an aspect of Peter being a little sarcastic, let's look. I mean, Peter was a zealot. He was the guy that was before Jesus wanting to overthrow the government, which is quite interesting. And here he has us submitting to them. And this is kind of, as citizens, in context, what I believe this passage is saying, that we submit to these institutions for God's glory because he's the only true authority. That we're not actually submitting to humans, we're submitting to God and we're obeying God. And that with that, it gives us the power to lay down our liberties, to lay down what we would hold dear to ourselves. And that he's talking about the Christians. We have a similar verse like this as well in Romans. And it's Romans chapter 13, 1 through 4. Paul says this time, "Let every person be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God. And those that exist have been instituted by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authorities resists what God has appointed, and those who resist will incur judgment. For rulers are not at error to good conduct, but to bad. Would you have no fear of the one who is in authority? Then do what is good, and you will receive his approval. For he is God's servant for your good. But if you do wrong, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. He is the servant of God, an avenger who carries out God's wrath on the wrongdoer." So in both these verses, we get given kind of the truest form of government that God would want, and that is justice. That God's government, God's kingdom, is one that's built on justice. That even those corrupt leaders are being used as a tool by God. It is not saying that we worship these leaders, that we have to praise these leaders, but simply as citizens, it is better for us to do good than to do evil. These verses in Romans and 1 Peter are clearly stating that our submission to authorities are ultimately good for us. In that the goal of government is to bring justice and praise. And I believe that when we have governments that are abusing their citizens and are not fulfilling these duties, we actually, in these passages, have a call to action. We got two subpoints. A, God asks us to remain in peace with governing authorities for the sake of the gospel, not for our comfort. Because God is calling us to sacrifice. He is saying, if you need to die, you're going to die. Because that's this for the sake of the gospel, not for your comfort. But it is not a message to ignore injustice for others. This is not a call for inaction. Instead, this is a call to act in love. There's a movie that was put out not too long ago based on a famous baseball player named Jackie Robinson. And this movie was called 42. And in this movie, there's a point to where Jackie Robinson is being so abused and heckled by the crowd that he is ready to throw hands. He is ready to go out and just get stuff done. And we have to realize that at this time, it was not very fair for African Americans. He fought so hard just to be respected enough to play in the major leagues, not to mention in everyday life have to get abused and heckled. And if you go to ever get the chance to go to the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, you will see some letters. And these are real handwritten letters that people were writing to Jackie Robinson. And it is chilling. Talking about wanting to kill him, wanting to rape his wife, wanting to kill everyone around him. Because one thing, and that was because he was black. And he had the audacity to attempt to play a white man's sport. And so in this scene, we have Jackie Robinson ready to just go. And rightfully so. I don't know if you've ever had that feeling of just anger building and bubbling, and you are ready to go. And in this moment, the owner of the baseball team knows what's going on in Jackie's head. He saw it happening. So he takes a step and he goes to him and he says, he tells Jackie at this point, if you go out there with violence, you are only going to prove that they are right. That the result of all this is that you are a violent person, that all African Americans are just animals at heart. So he says, why don't you do one better? And go out there and prove yourself and do good for this team. And the cool thing, the poetic justice of this scene is that he goes out there, hits a home run, and they just, like, win. So I don't know if that actually happened in real life, but it is based on the entire story of Jackie Robinson, that he faced so much hate. And instead of acting out in violence or revenge or in vengeance, he decided to prove that he was good, that he could do it, that he was not less than human. In fact, so many people at that point thought he was superhuman because this dude was amazing. He also steals home in one scene, and it's the most chilling thing. Go watch that movie. It's great. But this also sounds like someone else in American history, doesn't it? During the Civil Rights Movement, we've got a guy named Martin Luther King Jr., and we got a guy by the name of Malcolm X. One is extremely into the idea of we need to take the power back. We need to be violent, in a sense, not using those words, but let's rise up against this tyranny. Exactly, by all means necessary. And then you have Martin Luther King, who has the famous quote, darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. And we saw that nonviolent protests were the ones that seemingly stuck. Throughout all of history, for the most part, nonviolent protests are the ones that stick. There are a few exceptions, but even within violent uprisings, the oppressed often become the oppressor. And it swings from one side all the way to the other. You've got another example of Gandhi. I wouldn't necessarily say everything he believed was great. However, nonviolent action heard around the world seemed to do the greatest change. See, God through Peter is not calling us to blind submission. But when governments are oppressive. And they are no longer fulfilling this type of justice for the evil and praise for the good. When that's not lining up, I actually believe through this, because of what we're going to head to next, I think we have a call to stand up for those who can't stand up for themselves, or who are trying to take a more loving stance at things. It is not calling us to inaction, but to act in love. Point number two, we're called to be servants. And this is the gospel in goodness. 1 Peter 2, verse 15 says pretty clearly, "For this is the will of God, that by doing good you should put to silence the ignorance of foolish people." I think we're here today. I think this brings kind of this idea of submission to authority to the ground for us. Because although through the civil rights movement so much was achieved, we know that there is still work to be done, and that we can collaborate within the systems that have been given to us by our government to enact change. And it's the will of God that by doing good, you should put to silence the ignorance of foolish people. And this is a call for us to do good, not to sit and do nothing, not to obey by being silent, not to be subject by ignoring the injustice, but to act by doing good. Because it is the good that we do as Christians, that Peter is talking to this Christian church. It is the good that you do that can change the hearts of these rulers, that can change the culture around you. We're not called to submit to our culture. We are called to drive our culture forward by doing good. Because there are some ignorant and foolish people out there today. And there was some ignorant and foolish people out there during this time in this passage. You see, it doesn't say to start making fun of the rulers. It doesn't say to start passing around Facebook memes of this man being a fool. Doesn't say that. It says, instead of that, how about you just get out there and do some good in your community? Why don't you actually see who it's affecting? Like, we heard that story of a man being deported because of an accident. Why don't we see things like that and stand up for them? Why don't we do some good instead of just sitting back and saying, well, you know, should have had your papers, dude. It's not good. That's not good. The gospel doesn't call us to inaction. And this is the theme of today. It calls us to act. It doesn't say go home and sit in your chairs and do nothing. It says go home and do good. Because that's the only way you're going to silence these people that hate you. Look at Jesus as the example. Joxilil actually uses this in his book too. But when Jesus is confronted by Pilate and the Jews take him to him, he asks him, "Are you a king of the Jews?" And he says, "You said that, not me." Right? He lets them do the talking. Because we're going to hear that talking. But all of Jesus' life, whether it was when he was confronted by the Pharisees asking, you know, who do we pay our taxes to? And he says, give to Caesar what is Caesar, give to God what is God's. He backs all that up by doing good. not just by going to the cross, but by healing the sick and reestablishing people into their society, by giving others power to stand on their own. Almost every time Jesus healed someone, not only did he heal a physical ailment, but he gave them the possibility of being seen as a human again. And we're dealing with that today, still dealing with it. There's a power that we have in the gospel that doesn't only bring spiritual healing, doesn't only bring physical healing, but it brings power to give other people the right to be seen as humans. The gospel does not put people on pedestals. In fact, most of the time, it brings them down from pedestals because God is the only authority over all of that. And anyone else that has authority has only been placed there because of God. So in a time like today, when I have to hear people that I love and friends that I work with complain all the time about what our leader of this country is doing and doing wrong, I ask them, what are you doing that is so good? Because if you're not going to do good, I'm not going to listen to you. All you're doing is complaining. And a little bit of that may have been incited by my father growing up so often, knowing that he was a pastor in a church and we had to deal with people always complaining about the way things were and never wanting to do it themselves. I saw how hard it was to respect people that just complained and didn't do things. We have the power of the gospel to take to the world to actually do some good, not just sit behind our pulpits. And this is probably what I wrestled with the most. Because I can easily say, you know what, God, I'll trust you. Yeah, sure. I'll obey these things like taxes. I'll obey these things like voting, and I'll obey these things like losing most of my money to the government. Because I could, you know, it's you. My soul's in your hands. And I think what Peter's doing here is taking it out of the air and putting it to the ground. Yes, we need to believe that God is the authority over all of this, but it is not enough to just sit there and do nothing. We see that James calls us to do good because faith without works is dead. If we are going to call ourselves Christians today, it is not good enough to just blindly submit to human institutions. It is not enough to just sit in our churches and complain about what's going on around us. And I want to challenge you today. This is very real. This is very hard. And it is from God in his word. It is not enough to just have faith. Because a true faith in God works itself out in good works. And that's what James is saying. We are saved by faith alone, yes. But we can judge the fruit of that faith based on, is it actually changing us? Because I can say I'm a Christian all I want. People can say they're Christians all they want. But they don't do anything about it. And at that point, it even makes me question whether or not you're a Christian. Because we are called to do good. Jesus didn't just believe in the Father, but he laid down his kingdom and he came to us with all power and authority laid aside. He went to a cross. He did something about it. We are called to do something about it, and we are called to act in love and do good. I'm not talking about violent uprising revolutions here. But how about in our communities, when someone's hurting, we surround them and we do some good? How about, for instance, I'm opening a record store and I'm talking with a man at a bus stop. He's just asking me for some work. Hey man, I see you're opening a record store. I'm a handyman. I would love to be able to do some work for you. And in this exchange, I'm saying, oh, I'm sorry, we just actually finished all of that, but let me give you my number and I'd love for you to come back here and maybe I can get you some work. And in the middle of this conversation, which is very awesome, very like cordial and respectful, a police officer comes up, gets out of his car, and tells this man to leave. I'm guessing by now you can tell what color of skin this man had. Because simply based on the fact that a tall black man was talking to a small white man, this police officer thought that I was in trouble and that he was harassing me, and he shooed him away. And in that moment, I had a choice. Am I going to be okay with this and see this blatant kind of prejudice? Or am I going to stand up and do something that's right? And unfortunately, I kind of just took a middle ground. But as he's shooing this man away, I told the officer, I said, that is unnecessary. This man's just looking for work. He wasn't harming me. In fact, Heather's brother, my wife's brother, was with me cleaning windows. This man is just simply looking for work. And the officer, you know, kindly was like, well, you know, yeah, but we're just trying to patrol this area a little bit more for the new businesses. And I said, I appreciate that, but I didn't need you. Like, I'll let you know. There's this thing called a phone number, 911. I'll let you know if I need you. But in this instance, you shoot away a guy's opportunity to potentially get work. And I don't think that's what you guys stand for. I think what your badge stands for is protecting us when we need protecting and serving us when we need service. And so I just said, that was unnecessary. He was just looking for work. I appreciate what you do for us, but I didn't need that. And he then moved the conversation to ask me about my business, and we went on our way. You see, it's not always big, revolutionary things. And that in and of itself is not even the best example of how to deal with that. But I want you guys to really look inside yourselves. Is your Christianity just something you say you are? Is your faith just something that's fireproof for you to get you out of hell? Are you just waiting around? Because Peter's not calling these people who are being persecuted to wait around. He's not saying, just look forward. Just ignore your circumstances. Look forward. He's not saying that. He's saying, do good. Point number three, we're called to be saints, ambassadors of Christ as saints. And this is the gospel in humility. 1 Peter 2:16 through 17 says, live as people who are free, not using your freedom as a cover up for evil, but living as servants of God. Honor everyone. Love the brotherhood. Fear God. Honor the emperor. Live as people who are free, because we are. But that freedom is not to be used as a cover up for evil. I think we do that a lot. I think we try to use our Christianity to ignore what is our evil. And most of the time, what Peter does here, most of the time we see that it's because we're not living as servants of God. And we're using our freedom to cover that up. In America today, our freedom as Christians to be open and free about who God is and tell people about Jesus often is used as a cover-up to do nothing in the realm of good works. Yes, preach the gospel, please, because people need to hear the hope of Christ. They need to hear the good news that their sin is gone and that they are saved for a greater purpose. But do not use your preaching of the gospel, your freedom to do whatever you like, as a way to cover up not doing good. Plenty of people can do good. There's a whole lot of non-Christian people that do a whole lot of good in this world. And so I'm not saying that we need to only do good, because that would just be a checklist in trying to earn some form of rapport with God. And I'm not saying that we need to do that. It does need to come out of a heart of faith. It does need to come out of a love for others. And the one thing that makes it different is the motivation. If you remember that context verse that I read before, the motivation of this is that we once were not a people, but now we are a chosen race. That once we didn't receive mercy, and now we have received mercy. And this is all for proclaiming the excellencies of him who called you. See, our good works look different because they don't point to ourselves. Our good works look different in the world around us because we don't want the glory. We want people to see our good works and worship God. So there is a difference. I'm not just saying let's go be active for the sake of being active. And I want you to hear that, because we believe in a gospel of grace, and we believe in a gospel of mercy, and we believe in a gospel that changes hearts. But in that new heart, I pray and I urge you to heed to the word of God. Live as people who are free, even though these people were not necessarily free. And don't use your freedom as a cover up for evil, but live as servants of God. We serve God, not human institutions. We don't do good works to make America better. We do good works so that people see God. We like to hide behind our nationalism in the church. This is something that, as you can tell, I'm not happy with. We're not called to make America better. We're not called to be ambassadors of America to the world. We are called to be ambassadors of Christ in America for the sake of his glory, not America's glory. We serve God, not man. And Peter ends it by saying, honor everyone, love the brotherhood, fear God. And then he says, honor the king again, honor the emperor. And what's funny here is, if he was truly being sarcastic, I don't think the last three verses have anything to do, because he goes into doing good and and honoring everyone and loving each other and serving people and explaining what governments should look like, he says, honor everyone. And what does that mean? What does this last piece mean? I think it truly means to humble ourselves, or ask God to humble ourselves, to see others as more important than us. As the church, Peter is asking them to see others as more important as yourselves. That's how you could submit to human institutions, because other people are more important than you. You can die for this gospel because you're secure in the hands of God. But do not let other people die without knowing who God is. Honor others more than yourself. Do not save your life if it means that you can preach the gospel to someone else by doing good. Honor everyone. Doesn't matter what color of skin they are. Doesn't matter what socioeconomic status they hold. Honor everyone. That means the rich people. That means the poor people. That means the middle class. It means emperors. It means kings. It means everyone. Honor everyone. And then it says, love the brotherhood. Love your brothers and sisters in Christ. And we know that the world will see and know God because of our love for one another. So he calls us to love one another. As a worldwide church, we are called to love one another. We're not called to rejoice over the downfall of one church so because it makes our church bigger. It's not to cause divisions and place doubt in the hearts of people. It means to love the church. Fear God. Place God in the ultimate status of honor. Listen to God. Hear what God has to say and put that to action. Fear God and honor the emperor. You see, I can wrestle with this for the rest of my life. As someone who doesn't take kindly to violence and evil and tyranny and governmental oppression and systemic issues that really could be done away with, I can wrestle with this as an individual, and I can push my agenda forward, but at the end of the day, I am called to humble myself, to lean on God's word, and honor people above me. As Christians, we're called to be humble, as Kendrick Lamar would say. We are called to honor others above ourselves. And what does that look like? Well, it looks like helping students go to camp. It looks like helping people who are hurting in our church. It looks like being a comforter to those who are hurting. It looks like feeding the homeless. Looks like taking care of widows. It looks like taking care of orphans. It looks like preaching the gospel. It looks like giving up our comfort for the sake of someone else's comfort. It looks like going to the cross.